and welcome back yet again to the Dual Screens podcast. My name is Andy, and this is, as you all know, the world's number one indie developer interview show, probably. And joining us this week, I'm very excited about this one, guys, is Tanya Short, captain of Kid Fox Games and developer of Boyfriend Dungeon, a dungeon crawler dating sim in which you can romance and date your weapons. Tanya.
Hi. Thanks, Andy.
Welcome to the show. How's it going?
Good to be here. Yeah. I'm, in the middle of making the weapons extra sexy, but I could take a break to come chat with you for a few minutes.
Oh, my. I feel like, no, go back and make them sexy.
Now I'm like, then we can't talk. All right. Goodbye.
Now it's like I'm a detriment to the game.
No, I mean, we've been working on it for some years, so a few minutes here and there. You got to take a break sometimes. Yeah, you can't just use the whetstone every day, all the time. You got to give them breaks.
So there's a lot to unpack in that intro. I could ask you about the budding game development scene up there in Canada. I could gush about Moon Hunters for a very long time.
Thank you.
Because I love the shit out of that game. But I think the more probing question, and that's very much a pun, is how does one embark on the journey to make a game about sword fucking?
Well, delicately, carefully.
Yes.
With a lot of forethought. Honestly, I would say the trajectory of Kit Fox Games overall has been a journey of me going from, you know, I knew how to make games generally. Like, I had made them in my spare time, and I had worked at a bigger, I don't know if you'd call it AAA, but a bigger company for 5 years. And so I'd seen game productions from start to finish, but, you know, finding my footing as a creative director and as an artist really has taken some years. And Moon Hunters will always have a special place in my heart because that was really, I would call it my debut as a game design lead. We had made Shattered Planet before, but it was under extremely constrained circumstances. Whereas Moon Hunters really was like a blank page, like, Tanya, what do you want to pitch to the world without any direction from anyone else? And Moon Hunters was sort of what came out of that. Of course, there were still constraints of various kinds of resources and things like that. But I'm still very proud of what we made. And coming from Moon Hunters, I felt like what was strongest about it was when I was truest to myself and what I really loved and what I wanted to see in the world. And, you know, then I guess what I saw was I wanted to see a game where you could kiss swords, and that's what needed to exist, apparently. So when I was brave enough to think, what do I really want to exist? It was Boyfriend Dungeon.
You know, it's funny because looking back at all the RPGs I've played throughout my entire history of gaming, it's funny how you can sometimes fall in love with a weapon. Like, when you get that ultimate blade or that secret piece of gear, it's like, I love the stats on this thing. So this, it makes like incredibly good sense in a lot of ways.
Well, I mean, honestly, I was just talking with Keith Bergen of, I think he does, it's Game Design Wisdom. And we were talking about how a lot of games just collapse treasure into loot. It's very common these days, and it makes sense as a production constraint that, you know, and Boyfriend Engine absolutely does also have loot, where it's, you know, you pick up a thing and it's plus one this and plus point two that and this currency and it's this value and this whatever. But we were nostalgic a little bit for the days when, yeah, a weapon was really meaningful. Like, this is very different from every other object in the game. Like, it feels like something, not just a line in a spreadsheet.
Right. Like pulling the master sword for the first time. Yeah. Like, there's a meaning behind it. There's a story, and it has like this feel that this is something of importance, not like, oh, it's like your plus five greatsword. Here's a plus 10 greatsword.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Or, I mean, in some of these games, it's really like, here's a +5.5 greatsword. And it's like, well, I upgraded. Yay, I guess. But yeah, like the Master Sword is a really good example of something that fits into our overall, you know, conception of the relationship between a warrior and their tool that serves them loyally. I mean, whether it's, you know, samurai or King Arthur or whatever, swords are a powerful symbol for thousands of years of human history. I would say love probably predates that.
Sure.
We were probably, I mean, maybe cave people were telling stories about their clubs. I don't know, but at the very least, they had each other. Yeah.
I see the DLC in the future already for this game.
It's you know, I go way back.
I'm
in an argument with my programmers right now, trying to figure out, can we please put in modding? Because I really want people to like add in, like Link and his sword and Cloud and
that's
his
gonna be like a be careful for what you wish for.
I know it'll be horrible. It'll be so bad, but it'll be incredible also.
Yes.
Like, I mean, what if Solid Snake is like dating his cardboard box? Like, you can have all kinds of amazing things in there that I can't put in legally, but like modders could make, right?
Totally, yeah. I want the Soul Reaver in that shit.
Like, I can put Stealthy Man and cardboard box, but it doesn't have the same.
Right, tank, it's like, you know? We get it. Like, oh, we see what you're trying to do there, but I want the real shit.
So kind of maybe Kojima himself could make a mod,
right,
you know?
Right. You know, he's a fan of weird shit, so.
Yeah, yeah. I saw it at a party once, but I didn't have the courage to go ask him if he would date some swords, unfortunately.
He'd probably give you a few pointers how to do that, too.
True.
He seems like the type.
He knows. He probably knows. But I don't know if he'd share it with me, you know? You got to get him really drunk.
Those are the industry secrets we're all trying to attain.
GDC. Oh, next year, GDC.
Memories, yeah. So give us the pitch. I mean, I kind of gave like a brief summary in the onset, but for those who want to know what this game really is, what is the core gameplay loop of Boyfriend Dungeon? What are we doing in this game?
So what you're doing actually is you're facing your fears. You're going to the dungeon and you're fighting monsters and you might find some weapon people, but really you're trying to get to the bottom of the dungeon. So you're trying to survive and you're using your health potions and your special abilities and stuff. And you're fighting and fighting and trying to get down further. At some point you probably die, and that's okay. But when you die, you get your experience points, everything you've achieved up to that point, you probably level up. You go back, you rest in your apartment. And if you have spent enough time with certain weapons, they might invite you on a date. And you go on a date and you level up your love with them. So now that weapon is leveled up basically. So then when you go back into the dungeon, both you are stronger and your weapon is stronger, has new abilities. You can choose what upgrades you want as they love rank up with you. But yeah, we have, so basically the loop is go to the dungeon, go on a date, go to the dungeon, go on a date, go on the dungeon, go on the date. And slowly get more and more powerful, as you do in most video games.
See, it feels like going in the dungeon would be a date for a sword.
It is also a type of date. So you do get some love points from going to the dungeon. And even within the dungeons, there's little like hangout spots. So like one of the dungeons is a mall, a fairly abandoned old mall. You know, nobody goes to the mall anymore.
Right.
But, you know, in that mall, you might find a little food court and have some ice cream and then go fight some monsters together. Yeah.
That's like the ideal date.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, that's what every adventurer wants to do. And we're all adventurers, right?
And I got to say, again, I have a few notes here, but level up your love, Beyblades, and the couple that slays together stays together. Did you write those? And I think you're a genius is my next.
Love was me. Level Up Your Love was me. I think Beyblades and the couple that slays together stays together was actually Victoria Tran, our old community manager. She was our old communications director. She has moved on since to manage the community of Among Us. Celebrity now.
All right, we're gonna get that email for later.
But yeah, I also came up with Shack and Slash.
Oh my God.
Awesome. Yeah. So we were a good team together. She promises, or she made me promise, that she could come back for the Boyfriend Dungeon launch because she's very attached to the game. But Among Us needed her direly in their current situation. So.
Yeah, I can't even imagine one of the biggest games ever. Like, we need you. It's like, shit, I must be a big deal.
It's really like, I mean, they needed someone like her for sure. I'm sure someone else could have done the job and whatever. But it's pretty amazing what they're doing over there. And then it was made by a team of three people, right? It's incredible. So happy for all of them.
So, I mean, historically, you guys have done a lot of dungeon crawler games. Where does the dating sim aspect come in? How did that come into the mix of, I mean, I'm a huge fan of genre blending and mixing and combining, even though it could be like a little bit risky as well, but where did this stem from? The idea of, okay, we're good at dungeon crawling, but what if we add this?
Well, honestly, originally I was sort of inspired by a bunch of RPGs that I'd played that had light dating sim elements, but they didn't let you date boys. I was very upset. I wanted to date everybody. I don't like being constrained to only dating.
To the choir.
Yeah, like there's all these wonderful dating sims. Like when I think I was in high school or middle school or something when Azure Dreams, I think, came out, and it was like you're trying to crawl this tower but also date all the people in the town. And Persona is a great series. There's a lot of series that sort of have some ideas of these things. It was back in like 2007. I remember I was going into graduate school to study level design. I was so dedicated to like joining the game industry. I was like, give me a master's degree. And I remember thinking to myself in 2007, well, you know, it's too bad that by the time I'm a creative director, there's probably going to be tons of dating sim RPGs for women, because it's so obvious to me that this is necessary that, oh, well, I mean, at least there'll be tons I can play. And then maybe by the time I'm a creative director, you know, I'll have a different idea. and then here we were in 2017. And I was joking with my team, you know, the Boyfriend Dungeon still doesn't exist. Can you believe it? who wants to make Boyfriend Dungeon? And they were like, wasn't that a joke that you made a couple of years ago? And I was like, well, yeah, it was. But also, what if we actually made it?
Right.
And honestly, we thought it would be a small game. We were like, oh, you know, it's just a little dating sim and a little bit of a dungeon. It's not like a full whatever.
We're not gonna launch a massively successful Kickstarter campaign and rake in a bunch of dough and now it's a huge thing. That's never gonna happen.
No, part of it was the feeling that we weren't sure how it would be received. We weren't sure how the internet would react, because when we looked on Steam, there didn't really exist anything like it. Like, this was March 2017. When we had just had a client contract canceled, actually, that we'd been working on after, while we were putting Moon Hunters on all the different platforms, we were working with this big company and they canceled it. And so we were like, well, what are we going to make next? Let's just make a little thing. And we don't know if the internet will like it. There's nothing like it on Steam. Everything on Steam is either gross, like giant, let's just say uncomfortable looking women on Steam, anime women, or they're just dungeon crawls. Like that was all that was there. And if we'd known how well it would be received, and if we'd known that, you know, by the time in 2020 rolled around, that there would be a pretty healthy, more inclusive dating sim environment on Steam, then maybe we would have actually hesitated, because we would have been, oh no, we have to make a big proper game. But we didn't know. We really thought maybe we'll just release it into silence and it'll just be something that we're proud to have made. But then it went viral, and then we had to do a Kickstarter, and then that went viral. And then, we were sort of the victims of our own marketing success, I guess.
I sort of feel like, how do you not know this would have been a huge thing?
Well, actually, in 2017, I sent my concept document, like basically before I even had the video that we announced in 2017, I sent out a little concept document with mock-ups and stuff to various publishers. none of them were interested. A couple of them, most of them gave the feedback, we don't like the name, it's too weird. Is that a placeholder name or is it real? We got a few publishers that were like, I don't know who the audience is. It was just, it was basically a lot of, we don't get it. And so like in retrospect, it's very easy to say, oh, well, yeah, it was a lot of hetero, older, mostly white dudes used to playing certain things and you know, they weren't in the audience. So of course they don't get it.
Right.
But at the time it really did strike a lot of doubt. And I'm the kind of person that, you know, I like to double check my assumptions and I'm a little bit, I mean, it's hard. I've sort of trained myself to get a little bit more arrogant as a creative director, because otherwise you're just so filled with self-doubt at all times, you can't do anything.
Right.
But yeah, in 2017, it really was, I spent money testing out, like, is Boyfriend Engine actually a good name? Is it like, is it okay? And like, I was doing lots of like focus groups and then we were really, we did the announcement without even having a Steam page, cause we didn't know that it was going to like explode everywhere. Yeah. It was, things are much easier to see in hindsight.
I think that was your first clue. If there's like publisher like resistance, you know you're onto something huge. Besides, we live in a post How to Fool Boyfriend world as well.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
that's a dating sim with pigeons.
Yeah, and actually Hatomoa, the creative force behind that, she actually designed one of our weapons.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, she designed the scythe. The scythe turns into a non-binary witch who has a raven familiar and they're very unhappy to see you at first.
Interesting. So when pairing the dating sim genre with a dungeon crawler, is it more of a response to make, because dating sims, I don't care for them as much, again, only if they involve pigeons, apparently. Was it to make them more engaging and like with a bit more action in it than just scrolling through text and making decisions?
Choices? I mean, honestly, I get really restless playing things that people call visual novels. Like, yes. I read a lot in like every day. I read before bed, and I enjoy novels very much. There's something about sitting at my computer, I don't want to read a book. Boyfriend Dungeon is primarily a dungeon crawler. And I think it's clear as a designer that that's where my interest primarily is. Like, I like characters and I like making interesting choices and I like interesting narratives, but I think some of the visual novel fans might be slightly disappointed if our dates aren't very long. Like, I think they're short and sweet and memorable and funny, and that's fine. Like, I don't want to spend more time on that. I want to go back to the dungeon after a few minutes. Honestly, a lot of it has been just following my taste. Like, when I'm playtesting, when do I get restless and want to go back to the dungeon? Like, okay, that's probably, maybe this one's going on a little bit too long or that kind of thing. And I just have to follow my taste and hope there's enough people out there that feel the same way. Our beta test is going very well. So I think we have a good balance, but we'll see.
Is the intention more to bring in visual novel fans into like the dungeon crawling world, or more those who enjoy a strict dungeon crawling gameplay?
Oh my goodness. I feel like I have no control over that. I'm trying to pitch the game to as many people as can possibly know that it exists and see who likes it. But I do think we're going to find more success with the latter group. I think we're going to find more success with people who are like, I like dungeons, but they feel a little shallow. I want something a little bit different. I think that they'll enjoy it more because most of the game is dungeon crawling for sure.
Now I'm looking at the list of weapons here, weapons/people. Are they based on actual human beings you know in real life? And can I have Seven's phone number? my follow-up question to that.
You cannot have Seven's phone number. His agent would kill me. But no, I so as a writer, all of any romantic interest has to be slightly inspired by someone I've known or a crush that I've had a little bit. Like there has to be elements there for it to feel real, I think. And at first the main challenge was actually making them all sound more different from each other, because by nature I'm drawn to a certain kind of personality. And so it's taken some extra effort to make sure they don't all sound like sweet boys.
Right.
Make sure they all have a distinct voice. But yeah, one is based on my first serious ex and some drama around that.
Oh boy.
One is inspired by, well, I don't want to go into it, but yes, I would. I will say that when I write any given character, they are briefly my favorite. It's really fun to write each of them because I'm fond of each of them now, and for each of their own special quirks and preferences. Yeah, they're each so adorable.
Yeah. So to build off of that, each one looks very different from the next, has a very unique personality. Does that reflect also in the gameplay in their weapon form while you're dungeon crawling?
Yes. And in fact, that's part of why it had to be delayed for some months, was that towards the middle of last year, we finally sort of settled on a good workflow for how to differentiate all the weapons. Because we'd shown at PAX, our PAX demo had three or four weapons you could play with, and they were different-ish, but there wasn't like this consistency to like, what is a combo and what is an upgrade and that kind of thing. And so we're finally now almost done. We're at the final, we're doing Scythe now, which is the last one, consolidating and revamping all of the attacks and combos and upgrades to follow the pattern. So the way it works is that you have your light attack and you have your heavy attack, and as soon as you start doing heavy attacks, you're committed to doing heavy attacks for the combos, but the different weapons have different effects and feelings. Like the dagger is very, very fast, and you tend to be very close to enemies. So it's a higher risk as a weapon. Whereas the laser saber, actually Seven, he creates chain lightning between enemies. So you tend to like sort of run in and like smack him around and then like run away while the chain lightning is sort of zapping them. The Talwar causes bleeding. The Scythe, which we're working on now, the ends of their finishers actually makes a gravity well. So it like sort of controls where the enemies are, but they're very slow and heavy. So you have to sort of position yourself carefully. But yeah, and then every other rank up, you get to choose between two upgrades. It even more different. So the gravity well, for example, you choose like, oh, do I want the gravity well to have damage over time, or do I want it to explode at the end? And that's the kind of thing that like wouldn't even make sense for any other weapon, because they're the only ones that has a gravity well. So yeah, as you get to love rank up with them, the more different they get, and the better you can sort of specialize in their fighting style.
Can you spread the love across all weapons, or is you,
absolutely,
or should you focus on one to like
get the most poly out? Armory, baby. it's sort of assumed that most people will probably have, you know, 1 to 3 favorites, and those will probably be the ones that they want to focus on. But it's not assumed that you're going to romance any of them. You can be just friends with them if you want. If you're just like, I want to be BFFs, that's fine. And B, I'm assuming people will at least go on 1 or 2 hangouts with the other weapons. So yeah, that's how the cadence sort of works. You do sort of end up maxing out your favorites, and then you go like check out some others until you can get deep enough in the dungeon to advance to the next plot point and love rank up some more with your fave.
Now I see that there's also a weapon that turns into a cat.
Yes.
Can you bang the cat?
No. No, the cat is platonic at all times. until the modders get a hold of it, I'm sure.
See, that's the real intention for the modding community. Oof. Right there. Oof. It's like, we couldn't do it in Persona 5. We'll do it in, no. We'll do it in this game.
That's the mod I'm not going to click on. I'll click on some of the other horrible mods, but no, the cat is, it's a little bit tsundere. He's, mm-hmm. He doesn't appreciate being pet at first. You have to earn his trust. Mm.
Sounds like most cats.
Yep. He's a little bit, you know, he has his own personality and wants, but if you earn his trust, then he'll be a lovely, lovely companion.
What's it like, after going through publishers and them giving you dumb feedback that was totally wrong, and then seeing the Kickstarter just explode? What's that like for you from the creative standpoint? Like, it's like the fuck you, I was right moment right there.
It felt good, for sure, to feel a little bit validated that yes, I do have some insights into some games that should exist, that maybe somebody should give me millions of dollars to distribute to indies instead of, you know, it being this platform portfolio or whatever.
Right.
But it is still a struggle for me to figure out what is the line between, yes, I have special insights, and yes, I do have good ideas sometimes, versus like, everything I say is brilliant, and I am definitely I'm in tune with the people, you know, like, it might just be that this was my last great idea. It's possible. I mean, it's probably not. I don't think so. But,
I don't think so.
But what if it was? It's possible. So I don't know. I want to stay humble, and I want to stay like grounded. And so I still have to do like market research and things like that to know what risks I'm taking. But like, mm-hmm. right now, for example, I feel very, very driven to make a cooking game. I don't see the market for it. Like, I've done the market research. It's very similar feeling to the 2017 moment where it was like, I do not know if people want this, but I really want it. And so I just have to trust that like, it'll find its audience, because I gotta make it. I can't not make it.
Listen, if we're gonna be boning spatulas and whisks, I'm on board for that.
The first pitch was cooking Casanova. I'm not gonna lie, that is, like, cooking dating game was a game that I had pitched, but no, we're going in not a dating direction at the moment. But I'll update you if
for sure,
if spatulas come back into play.
Right, but you should at the very least. Are you like at all tempted to send the Kickstarter link to these publishers that turned you down? Like, here it is.
I mean, honestly, we've hung out at parties since then. Like, the industry is so small. There's like, right. No room for I told you so.
Shockingly small, which is kind of it seems not real, but it really is like a tiny space.
Yeah. I mean, besides, I'm not bitter about it, to be honest. Like, they're just doing what's best, what they think is best, and they're trusting their insights and their gut. I think what became really clear to me was that a lot of people see their position and their insights as rational and based in logic and based in, you know, experience. And all that might be true, but it is so counterbalanced by personal taste that it's almost meaningless. Like, I guess it was just, it made it very, very clear to me that people at the top of the food chain in the game industry often think that they're making an objective statement, when really what they're saying is, I don't like it. Right. And they're not brave enough to say that, or they don't have the room to say that, or like, you know, they have billions of megacorp dollars riding on it. So they're not allowed to say, I just don't like it. But that's honestly what it comes down to for a lot of these things. And so part of my thinking about, you know, equity and representation and diversity and inclusion in the game industry has sort of come back around to thinking what we actually need is more diverse investors and more empowered and, you know, we need more resources in more diverse hands.
Right, because
so,
the games are out there. Like,
yeah,
games about any sort of subject matter or you know, character you can find if you look hard enough.
Mm-hmm. It's just but are they getting the millions of dollars?
Right. It's the, those gatekeepers at the top. That
exactly.
Are saying,
exactly.
We should be funding these ideas, not mm-hmm. saying like, well, you could just make it on your own and use all your life savings and good luck with that in a sense.
Yeah. And it's hard to say because, you know, you look on Steam and there are tons of games. Right. And if you aren't the target audience, like I've been on the other side of it. Like I've been pitched games where I'm like, maybe this is amazing. I don't get it.
Right.
Like, and like, I've been there. Like a lot of games aren't in my taste. And so I try to be honest about it and say, you know, I think it's just not for me. But like, that's not very encouraging for the developer to hear either. Because I'm another gatekeeper in some ways. Because I'm a little sense, I mean, yeah. we're a mini publisher, right? Like we're a micro publisher. Right. But it's genuinely hard because there are so many games out there, and you're trying to tell, you know, which are the diamonds in the rough and which are just rocks. Mm-hmm. Or like which are like the developers are diamonds in the rough, but their games are still rocks. Like, mm-hmm. like, but maybe their next one will be incredible.
Sure,
like
yeah.
what they need is like mentorship, or they need encouragement, or they just need more money. Mm-hmm. Like, is there something here that has high potential? That's a really hard call. And I don't envy the people who are sort of stuck in this role of gatekeeper. But honestly, they should just give their money to more kinds of people, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, they must hear 1,001 pitches a day.
Oh, so it's rough, I'm sure. Yeah, right. Impossible. Yeah.
I did want to ask you about this game's sound design and music, because I think that was one thing that actually got to me, aside from mm-hmm. the gameplay. Mm-hmm, it mm-hmm. sounds incredible. Let's go into that for a little bit.
Yeah. Boyfriend Dungeon soundtrack is...
It's lit. I was going to say
it. It's, oh my God, it's incredible. Like, I have never been such a big fan of something associated with my own work before. But no, the Boyfriend Dungeon soundtrack is absolutely amazing. It's going to win tons of awards, I'm sure. If you could play a little clip on your podcast, I'd love that.
Oh, we'll do that.
Excellent. But yeah, we've released, I think, 3 of the songs on the soundtrack. And there's a full, like, 15, I think, plus instrumental versions. So it's, no, I've been listening to it on repeat for years, and it's still really good. Marsky is the composer, and Madeline McQueen is the vocalist. And they channeled kind of a 90s California vibe, because that's sort of the Boyfriend Dungeon, Verona Beach, Tanya's teenage hood kind of vibe. But you know, it's still modern sounding, but there is sort of a 90s groove to it, I think.
Well, it has like a modernish setting to the game as well.
Yeah, yeah. It's not modern California.
Right, mm-hmm. right. It's not set like, you know, the old times.
No, no, no. That's why it's in the mall and the nightclub or right, the dungeons. Right. But
the nightclub.
But yeah, Verona Beach is a fictional town in California. Sort of inspired by my childhood in California, sort of inspired by my impression of what it would be like to live on the coast. Cause I actually lived in a desert, like closer to Arizona and Nevada. But yeah, San Luis Obispo is sort of my go-to inspiration when I'm thinking about the setting.
Do you work alongside the composers when they're making the tracks, or you sort of leave them to it?
I give them direction. I'm like, I want a sad song. And they're like, what does that mean? And Marsky.
How much time do you have?
Yeah, Marsky is like, sad means a lot of things, Tanya. Yeah. Like there's a lot of different songs you could call it. Why
Here's
don't you
my
give
diary,
me...
read a few pages, and then.
Yeah. So what he ended up doing, the workflow ended up being that I would say, for example, I want a sad song that I'm going to play during, you know, sad moments. Here's a few references. And so I'd come up with like 3 songs that I thought were sort of had elements of what I wanted. And then they'd go away and make something perfect. That's how it would go. And I would give some ideas for lyrics as well. I think Maddie McQueen wrote all the lyrics herself. But yeah, I think there's one that's like being overwhelmed with too many romantic options. And there's one that's like, you know, you want to be forged in the flames and you want to be perfect on the anvil, you know, like that kind of feeling. But wanting to be sharper. But yeah, there's a lot of good, a lot of good songs, and there's a little bit of a silly undertone to it, but they're bangers.
I mean, your dating weapons. The silly is just all over the place.
Yeah.
And it's so good.
It's kind of amazing how humor really does help people become more comfortable too. Mm. Like for anybody that might have been slightly put off by, you know, it's a little bit of subversion of the typical male gaze, right? Like even just having attractive men in a game puts some men off. They're like, oh, Devil May Cry, whoa, it's so weird, I don't know.
Why is Dante so hot? Those weird boners again.
Oh, mercy. But honestly, like we were actually concerned at the very beginning because the original concept was just, I want to go to the dungeon and fight monsters and date various kinds of people. Like I want there to be men I can date in addition to the women, please.
Right, please.
And then the more that we thought about it, there were various reasons why dating weapons was a great direction to go. And we're like, yes, that's what we're doing. But one of the advantages of that is that it sort of disarms people who might have been slightly too tense about the idea of attractive men, because they can, you'll see this on Hatful Boyfriend as well, actually. If you go to the Hatful Boyfriend page and look at the reviews, you'll see people who are like, I got this as a joke, but also it's really good. Right. and that's exactly what we need. We need the average Steam gamer to secretly enjoy, as a joke, dating his sword.
It might be like a lifelong dream for a lot of gamers, though, to date.
I know, yeah.
Their weapons. I'm sure a lot of them love, again, their master sword, or their energy sword, or their soul reaver. Yeah. It's like...
You know, honestly, I've always been more into the melee weapons. Like even when I was playing, I think it was Call of Duty or something, I would still play the knife. That's what I'm doing. That's where we're going.
Or like Ninja Gaiden, the Dragon Sword. Another good.
I've never played that one, but I trust you. Oh.
So when can we play this masterpiece? When's it coming out? I need it
soon
right now.
As humanly possible. I'm sorry.
Is there a time frame in mind that you've had with the team internally, or is that
so internally? Honestly, we thought that we would finish it a while ago. The pandemic did have, unfortunately, a slowdown effect on all of us. I mean, some of it was so back in 2018 when the Kickstarter exploded, we did deliberately decide, let's take more time with this, that we have a lot of people watching us. We don't want to disappoint them. Let's make sure it's really good. And there were some changes that you can actually see if you look in between like the very first announcement and what the game looks like now. You can tell that we went back and decided to take a lot more time on, like, back in the beginning, the character only had like left and right, I think. Like they didn't even have up and down sprites. It was just like always facing the camera. And we're like, oh, I guess we have to like do this properly. And it's the same with like dungeons and date effects and things like that. Anyway, my point is we did deliberately decide back in 2018 that we would do it right. We would not rush things out too quickly. Because that definitely bit us a little bit with the release of Moon Hunters. It became an amazing game, I think, partially due to the DLC and live ops that we did. Mm-hmm. It was sort of key to it sort of becoming what it needed to be. But it would have been so much easier if we'd just done that for like 3 weeks before the game came out. Like we looked back and we were like, what were we thinking? So we didn't want to do that again with Boyfriend Engine. And so the short answer is it's going to be some months, but we do see the light at the end of the tunnel. It is going to be a little bit slower because we want to release simultaneously on PC and Switch. We don't want to do one and then the other like we did with Moon Hunters. That'll add some time and logistics, but we already have people looking at it, so I'm hopeful we'll be able to give you a release date soon, Andy.
What was Nintendo's reaction? Like, how did they say, yes, we want this on our platform?
Honestly, they were nervous at first. They had sort of, I think it was the Nintendo America marketing team. I'm probably not allowed to say this, but I think the Nintendo American marketing team, they're probably gone by now anyway, it's fine.
Sure.
I think at the time they had or maybe it was even from Japan, like the top line saying like no romantic content And I think that was sort of for their safety because they weren't sure about, you know, protecting children from seeing adult content and things like that. But yeah, there, I remember somebody saying like, we have a strict no romance promotion guidance right now. And that changed at some point because then we were included in a direct later, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it was definitely like a, that's too bad because you're definitely the best platform for this game right now. but yeah, so I'm glad that changed. But no, they were initially nervous, but they've come around.
Are Microsoft and Sony on the table at some point?
After I'm not this? Allowed to say anything about
oh,
that.
Oh my God, of course. I just had to ask. Tell me one thing about this game that no one knows.
Whoa. One thing about this game that no one knows. Let's see. At one point, Laser Saber has trouble expressing his feelings.
Uh-huh.
And he gives you cut up apples as a gift to show that he's been thinking about you.
Why cut up apples?
This was actually, I mean, I shouldn't take.
My light just died in front of my face right now.
I shouldn't take credit for that. It was actually a suggestion from Victoria. It's sort of a joke among the Asian American community that giving people fruit is how you say I love you without saying it. It's sort of like how parents, like if you have a parent that isn't very expressive, but they like cut up
to feed you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Right. They're trying to feed you as a way of showing affection. And so there's a moment with Laser Saber where he does that. And like at later, one of his friends is like, I heard he gave you some fruit. This must be serious.
You're like a totally like you're an item now. You're like, you know, legit.
Yeah, exactly. You got the apples.
All right. So let's dive in to some rapid fire questions.
Okay. I'm gonna take a sip of coffee here.
Yeah. We're gonna get deep, Tanya. All the way to the hilt. We're going all the way in.
Whoa.
A fuck, marry, or kill? The Master Sword, the Keyblade, or the Buster Sword?
Oh my. Sorry, you said Master Sword, Keyblade, or?
The Buster Sword.
The Buster Sword. Oh. You gotta marry the Master Sword. It's there for you for life.
Yeah.
And like, nah, sorry, Keyblade, you're dead. So I guess that means the Buster Sword is the fuck. Yeah, yeah, that's how
right,
it goes.
Right. I think that is the exact perfect answer to that question.
I think it's the only answer. Right. Who would answer differently?
You know
Who?
What? That's actually a fun tangent. If you could have any weapon cameo in your game, one choice, who would it be?
Oh, it would definitely be the Masamune Sephiroth in combo.
God, yes.
Definitely, 1000%.
All right, so take a good gander at me, my flesh, my beautiful blue eyes. Mm-hmm. What weapon would I be in Boyfriend No Joke?
Oh, interesting. Well, see, you're a podcast host, so there should be a little bit of a technique there. But you also have a little bit of like almost a Scandinavian look to you.
Right.
I think I'd go, I mean, I'd need to do a little bit of research into, you know, traditional weapons of that area, but I'd probably look at like a Viking sword that's a little bit more refined, but probably, yeah, I'd have to look up what those swords would be.
All right, I'll
could
take
be a
that.
Two-hander, yeah.
Right, because I would think I'm like a, you know, the joke, like a mop weapon in the game, you know?
You can be.
Unassuming, but it's like really powerful.
I support you in whatever form you wish to take, honestly.
Pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
Yes.
Wow, very quick on that, yes.
I love all kinds of pizza, honestly. Very, very pro pizza.
When you're getting dressed to go about your day and thinking about how to make weapons sexier, is it sock, sock, shoe, shoe, or sock, shoe, sock, shoe?
Wait, there are actually people who put on sock and then shoe and then sock and then shoe?
That is the correct answer.
There are people that do that?
Yeah.
Wow. No, I mean, my shoes are by the door, so I don't even put on shoes most days.
They're better known as serial killers and sociopaths.
Yeah. Wow. No. I mean, I guess, like, if I was going to be, you know, comedian here, I'd be like, oh yeah, I put the socks on my hands and then I put the socks on my feet and then I put the socks on my head and then I put my shoes.
Oh no, I do socks, sandals, socks.
Yeah,
sandal.
That's obviously
the kind of person I am.
All on one foot.
What word best describes you when you're drunk?
Giggly.
Giggly. I love it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Everything's hilarious. Yeah.
What is a body part you wouldn't mind losing?
Ooh. Wait, I was just thinking about a useless body part the other day. What was it? I wouldn't mind losing. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I was going to say elbow, but then I'd have to walk around like with my arms all stiff and unable to bend. So I do sort of need elbows.
Sure.
I guess I could lose my ears. Like you don't really need the flap part, right?
Oh, the
like
earlobe.
Whole. I mean, even just the whole attachment part. Like you only need the interior part, really. Sure. I could probably get artificial ears pretty easily. Yeah. So.
Right.
Yeah, my vote for all the serial killers out there. If you're gonna torture me for a few years, take the ears, please.
Right.
I'll be like, thank you. That was very nice.
Is cereal a soup?
If you want it to be, I support your choices. Mm.
Mm. On any given day, how many pigeons could you carry in your arms?
Assuming they're somewhat consensual.
Right. So the pigeons are a little, you're on the docile side. They're just hanging out, cooing away.
Yeah.
Doing pigeon things.
I can probably carry like 20. I mean, they're really light. It's more
20
about
20 pigeons.
Yeah. You gotta stack them. You gotta have like a pyramid physics with the pigeons. But like if they're cooperating, they're pretty
big
light.
A pigeon is, right?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be able to see very well. But like, you know, I could have a couple on my shoulder, a couple on my head, and the rest of my arms. It'd be fine.
Would you rather have the power of flight or invisibility?
Oh, flight, 1,000%. I used to love having flying dreams. Yeah, it was great. Hmm.
Would you rather go back to the age of 5 with all you've learned as your adult self or know everything that your future self will know now?
I think I had a pretty difficult childhood, so that might color this a little bit, but I have a deliberate not looking backwards kind of view on life. So I think I would pick the future. If I could know what was the situation in the future, I think I'd be a lot less stressed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll pick that.
Okay. What was your last thought before going to bed last night?
Oh, I was thinking about the cooking game. Yeah, I was thinking about delicious flans and croissants.
It's confirmed.
I mean, I don't know how it can. I mean, it might be a jam game. It might be like a free game on itch or something. But like, I gotta have these shortcakes.
But I think you know, Tanya, that sometimes the best games are born out of game jams.
They are. It's true. Sometimes.
I couldn't even count how many interviews you've done where it's like, how'd the game start out? Oh, there was a game jam. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yep.
How it always is.
Mm-hmm.
Would you rather invent something new, which I think you kind of have, or discover something new?
If I had the choice, I'd love to discover something new. I think the world is fascinating, like infinitely fascinating. And there's so much left to discover out there, whether it's about like, what the hell even is sleep? Or like, what's going on out in space? Or what's going on at the bottom of the ocean? Like, there's so many cool things out there.
Oh, the ocean.
To discover. So like, some part of me regrets that I left biology to pursue, first English literature and then video games, because I feel like discovery would be in some ways a lot more fulfilling to feel like there's something outside myself that I'm contributing to. I mean, art, even especially commercial art, but even fine art is like fundamentally narcissistic and mm-hmm. to some degree. So I'd pick discovery if I could, but too late now. Oh, well.
Would you rather be a reverse centaur or a reverse mermaid?
Oh, wow. Ocean. Gotta be a mermaid.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Ocean.
That's how you go and find out what's down there.
Yeah. I mean, I like horses.
Sure.
But I don't think I want to be a horse. I think I'd rather be a fish. Yeah. Right. Plus, I'd get to see like all the old ones at the bottom of the ocean. It'd be fantastic. Yeah.
The old ones.
Yeah. Less than personal.
Right. Give us a non-inspirational quote.
Nobody cares. I think this all the time. It's actually inspirational to me when I'm feeling too anxious or like, I don't know, anytime I'm feeling down, I just remind myself, nobody cares. No, yeah. Nobody really cares.
Right. In the grand scheme of things, yeah. No one gives a shit.
Yeah. And like when you're feeling up, maybe that's a sad thing to hear. It's uninspirational, but like,
right.
But it's my uninspirational inspirational. Nobody cares.
What do you think people notice most about you?
I think they notice that I'm very interested in them. When I meet someone for the first time, I mean, it's gotten less as I've gotten a little bit older and known more thousands of people, but I do tend to immediately want to know more about them and want to know what their deal is and what's unique about them. And I like most people as soon as I meet them. So I don't know if they consciously notice, but I do think most people are like, oh, like she's paying attention to me. Because like, that's just something I want to do. Yeah.
It's like this podcast's exact mission statement. We love people. We want to know all about them, hear their stories.
It's been nice. I feel like I've gotten, that treatment from you. It's very nice.
Well, of course, but you're making an amazing game, which I'm going to buy day one when it comes out at some point.
Thank you.
This year.
Someday.
Fingers crossed. We can take that offline, though, at some point to, get the inside scoop.
Yes.
Oh, alrighty. Would you rather have one real get-out-of-jail-free card or a key that opens any door?
Oh, the thief within me. Mm-hmm. Like, not even just for stealing, just, the curiosity of, seeing certain things. But one get-out-of-jail... But I don't know if I have any... No, I'll take the key.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm too curious for my own good. I'll end up in jail, but oh well.
Yeah, because the first one seems like, what crime do you want to commit, essentially?
Yeah, I don't have a crime that I want to commit other than looking in people's stuff. So I might as well get the key.
Now, if you were a weapon in your own game, what would you be?
Oh, I answered this. What did I answer? I don't even remember because I did think about this quite a bit at one point. Sorry, I have to be consistent with my canon.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's all about the lore.
Yes.
You know?
I said I would transform into a saber. Mm-hmm. Mm. That was my favorite fencing weapon. And saber, the saber wants to be graceful, but really isn't. The saber just whacks you over the head. And that's sort of me. I always want to be subtle and artistic. And really, it's just like, I just go do the thing.
Right. All right. Well, it's been so great talking to you, Tanya.
Thank you, Andy.
You've been such a delight.
It's been a true joy.
Where can our listeners find Boyfriend Dungeon? Give us all the plugs, the socials, the YouTube,
absolutely,
the Twitters. Give us the whole spiel right now.
The important thing is that the company is called Kit Fox Games. So whether you are on Twitter or Steam or Discord, I do recommend you look up Kit Fox Games. KitFoxGames.com actually also has newsletter signups, both for the company as a whole and for each game that you're interested in. So we have a monthly newsletter for Dwarf Fortress, for Mondo Museum, for Paparazzi, for Boyfriend Dungeon. And the Boyfriend Dungeon letter is a love letter from each weapon every month. You get a different weapon that's wooing you and telling you what's going on with the game. And I've been told it makes people's day every month. So if you are at all interested in flirty weapons, I do recommend signing up for the Boyfriend Ninja newsletter. I can see Andy signing up right now.
I am, yeah. No, actually, I got a thought while you were talking about that. I was like, there is a great potential for some sort of sex toy collaboration with this game at some point.
That's true. That's true. Our game is not explicit.
It isn't.
It isn't. The game itself is actually, you know, capital T for tasteful.
Right. Yes.
But, you know, it implies some things.
Capital T for throbbing.
But letting a hardware partner take care of the explicit right. material would be interesting.
Are you listening, Nintendo? We're going to make sex toys on this game. That's what you signed up for. Woo! All right. Well, thank you, Tanya. And thank you, listeners, for joining us on what has been one spicy interview.
Thank you, Andy.
I feel.
And have an excellent day and year.
Yes. And for all of you out there, please check out this game. I think it will change your life in so many ways than one. And as always, please be excellent to each other.